Dave Hall here with Agogi Fitness Systems and Mental Meatheads. Today I've got on the line with you Khalid El Masri. Khalid is a friend of Tico Reindorf's, and it was through Tico's recommendation that I got to meet with him today. He's a trainer out at 24 Hour Fitness in San Francisco, California, and he's got some really cool ideas on training. He's working on a NorCal Fitness Summit, and having just pulled off a workshop on my own, I offer him every bit of hope for success and support on that. That's quite an endeavor. So, and I was really exciting. Without further ado, here's Khalid. Khalid, say hey to everybody.
How's it going? Thank you for having me on today.
Hey, no problem. I'll go ahead and mention I'm in Alabama and Khalid is in California, and apparently the wires are running a little slow today, so there's a little bit of a lag between us. So just bear with us as we rock through this. Khalid, tell us a little bit about your training style. Tell us how you work and what your focus is.
For me, it's definitely evolved over the years. I started out, I've been in this industry about 8 years now, and when I started just like every other new trainer, the whole bodybuilding split, chest, national chest bench press day on Monday, and the body parts, throughout the rest of the week. And even though that worked really well with my style and what I was looking to do, that wasn't really what my clients wanted to do. And as I became more educated and I got more certifications, I learned how to properly train clients and looking at, the functionality of how we move and the 3D movements of how the body works. And now I am more of a total body, high intensity fat loss guy. And I also do some corrective exercise training as well with some of our older population clients.
Cool. Tell us about your background. Were you a bodybuilder, or was that just how you got started into that? How did that all work out?
I played football since I was in, what, sixth grade.
Yeah.
And, the whole, I want to be big, I want to play football, I'm going to put on as much muscle as I can. And my dad was always in bodybuilding, so I, went to the gym with my dad and worked out. And my family just was all around fitness. So we always, as I was at a young age, I was always exposed to it. And it just, as I got into high school and college, I just kept weight training and weight training. And, at one point I was getting ready for a bodybuilding show back about 6 years ago. And that's when I just dove right in and, ate everything in sight and trained as hard as and heavy as I could and put on some serious size. And, I'm Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
And I guess we're big boned, or we hold a lot of muscle size. So I've always just been, I've had the blend of good training and just the genetics.
Cool. I know from my first introduction to the bodybuilding world is I'm 41, so when I was like 8 or 9 years old, Pumping Iron came out on PBS. So I remember actually watching it on, on the Alabama Public Broadcasting Station. And then years later, I went back and got to read the book. And I know in the Middle East that bodybuilding in particular is really kind of big. So you said your dad was a bodybuilder. Speak to that, because I think you can talk a lot more fluently and accurately about it than I can from just based off of, my few influences. What's the scene for bodybuilding in your experience?
It's huge. I actually went back to Lebanon. I'm from Lebanon, and that's where I was born, and I moved here when I was five, but I went back, what, 15 years ago, and I swear to God, everybody works out. Everybody was at a health club working out. Like, everyone was pumping iron, all big Middle Eastern guys, and even some women, all weight training. And it was intense. Like, it was actually pretty neat to see, not realizing that it was that big of an influence back there. But there's some big name bodybuilders that have come out of Lebanon. Like Samir Banout came out and was a professional bodybuilder that actually won Mr. Olympia. He was from Beirut, Lebanon. So it's definitely had an influence.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool. There is there's a big Lebanese community here in Birmingham, believe it or not. And yeah. And wow. In fact, the joke when I was growing up was that every generation has a Shannara in it. And so you go through for the last 40 years, you go through any of the school's yearbooks, and there's going to be at least one Shannara in every class.
That's
so
yeah,
it's cool. So you said that sort of your start was in the bodybuilding world, and that you've kind of gravitated away from that. Is that more, you think, because of client demand or because of your own transition and development?
I would say a little bit of both, but more of client demand. You know, I still train like a bodybuilder. I still do some of those same exercises, but I've also added, I went back to like my power cleans, my hang cleans. A lot of the workouts I used to do when I was playing football, because to be honest, that stuff puts on size.
Yeah, it does.
So I've incorporated those back into my program, but I kind of took a step back when I became a trainer, or when I was training, and looked at, okay, who is my client base? And once I identified, okay, my client base are not bodybuilders. That's not who walks through our gym door every day. It's the, you know, 25 to 45, 55 female that wants to lose weight or lose body fat, or it's the older population client that, you know, just got a, you know, surgery or rehab and wants to continue their rehab or their corrective program. So once I've identified that, I targeted towards those two different demographics just to help me be successful as a trainer.
Yeah, I understand that. There's a cross between what we want to do and the demands of our business in terms of making a living. So yeah, I follow that.
Yeah.
Walk me through, just in general terms. I'm not interested in stealing your magic or anything like that. But you know, I'm a 30-year-old female who walks into your gym, and I'm looking for a fat loss program. What's your general approach? How do you handle that?
For me, I screen everybody, no matter what it is, what their goal is. I'm FMS certified, level 1, and so I run everybody through the FMS screen, and through the FMS screen, the program gets built. But I do the thorough job of explaining here at the end of the screen, here's what I found, and here's what we're going to address. And in addressing these issues, it's going to help us burn more calories, because guess what? If your thoracic spine has more movement into it and it's not stiff, you're going to be able to run a little bit longer, which is going to help you burn more calories, which will end up helping you burn more fat. Or you can add the strength training component to it, and you know, we fix any deviation. Well, now you can lift more weight or a higher intensity, which will put on lean muscle, which will help us burn more fat. So I do a thorough job of explaining from point A to point B, here's our roadmap, and here's what it's going to take to get us to that end result.
Cool. FMS, that's Gray Cook, right?
Yep, functional movement screen.
Yeah.
No plug-in.
No, of course not, but I did a Perform Better Summit, I guess maybe a year ago over in Atlanta, and he was presenting at that. And got to meet and do some of his work. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool. I like that.
It's an amazing, it makes screening very, very, it's a systematic way to screen every single person. But again, it's a tool, and that's the one thing. Now, for me, I actually oversee, I'm the fitness manager at my club, so I actually oversee my entire training department, as well as train clients. So for me, we're trying to systemize whenever a client comes in, what does our assessment look like, or what does our screening process look like? And so we're trying to systemize the FMS as our screening process, just to give the trainers another tool. It's not the end-all, be-all screening process, but it's another tool in your toolbox.
Absolutely, and I think that's the key right there is having a system in place. You know, I think that the biggest mistake that I made when I was starting out as a trainer was that I was just a total whore. I would do, you know, anything and everything my clients wanted. Just, you know, keep coming in and keep writing that check every month. And you know, and what happened is what they wanted was to pay somebody to say they had a trainer. You know, but they didn't actually really want to do anything. They just wanted to say they had a trainer. And then they wanted somebody to be mad at 6 weeks, 6 months, a year later when nothing changed. And so, you know, I learned to get away from that and start to, you know, implementing systems in place. And I also got to the point where I wasn't afraid to fire a client if we weren't going to work out. So
absolutely. You know, that's it's a relief when you can, when you're at that point where, you know, you don't have to take on everybody. You can be very selective, because at the end of the day, they got to want it. And I can't want it for you. I can't give you. You got to have the heart to put in the work to get the result. I can't do it for you. And once I understood that, and I became more confident in my skills as a trainer, and now these skills is what I try to develop and coach my team on, is you don't have to train everybody. Not everybody's being the right fit for you. So it's a growing process. It's taken me 8 years to get to this point. So it's definitely, I definitely remember where I was and where I am now, and that's what I try to preach to my team and coach my team.
Nice. That that's got to be kind of cool too. It's a whole new level of responsibility and experience to have a team. You know, in my gym, it's really just me, and I haven't leveraged myself to the place of bringing somebody in, mainly because what I do is so wrapped up in me, and so. That's cool, though. I applaud that, and we'll take notes from you on figuring out how to handle and master that process. What was the transition like from you? Because you went, I'm assuming, you correct me if I'm wrong, but you started out as a trainer where you are now and then worked your way up into this leadership position. How was that transition for you?
It was horrible at first. and the only reason I say that was I had no leadership management skills. I basically was the trainer that wrote, you know, $8,000 to $10,000 in revenue and serviced a ton of sessions and worked my butt off, and in doing that earned a fitness manager position. So it was one of those, you know, John Maxwell talks about the five levels of leadership. I was a level one leader. I was a leader because I had the title fitness manager. And so the first 6 months to a year, I was the worst fitness manager ever, with the way I developed, coached, and hired, fired. And then I had to figure it out. And once I started diving into, you know, personal development, team building, coaching, and then just I took an oath to be, you know, as knowledgeable as I possibly can. So that way, when a trainer asks me a question, I may not know it, but I at least will know where to guide them to get the right information.
Right on, cool. Inside of personal development, that's one of my key interests. Who do you look to? Where do you go for your own study and inspiration and knowledge?
First and foremost, Todd Durkin.
Gotcha.
He's been an awesome mentor for the last 3 years. I've been in his Platinum Mastermind group, and I tell you right, I would not be who I am today if it wasn't for that Mastermind group 3 years ago. Just from the personal growth and professional growth, I wouldn't be able to put this summit together and bring the presenters that I'm bringing into this summit if it wasn't for Todd Durkin and the growth over those last 3 years. So he's first and foremost Todd. Second, I'm a big John Maxwell fan. I love you know, developing the leader within you, developing the leaders around you, being a person of influence. I would say him. John Gordon is another one. Those are like my big three that Darren Hardy, I'll add another one to that group. Darren Hardy from he wrote The Compound Effect, one of the best books I've ever read on just, you know, taking it day by day and watching that growth happen. So I would say those four would be my top four from a personal development standpoint.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool. It sounds like you hit the certification and the summit circuits pretty hard. How often do you try to get to those types of things?
I try to do at least one or two summits a year. I volunteer for IDEA. So last year I volunteered at the IDEA World Convention in San Diego. So I basically traded hours for dollars or dollars for hours. I'd worked 32 hours in those 4 days, but in return, I got to attend the seminar. That was awesome. I met a lot of the presenters. I got to talk to them on a face-to-face basis, not just watching them present, but they came and talked to me after, and it was cool. And then Perform Better was another one down in Long Beach. You know, went with some of my trainers when I was down in Long Beach and took them there. So I try to do at least one or two a year. You know, with the goal of eventually in the next year or two, myself actually being on stage presenting.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Cool. How big is your facility?
It is 60,000 square feet. It's a monster.
Jeez. Okay, yeah. So you could fit almost 60 of my gyms in your gym.
Wow.
Nice.
I love it.
That's a lot of space, man.
It is. It's awesome, though. I mean, it's, you know, we have, four functional training areas for the trainers to train their clients, you know, from a full TRX A-frame with 20 TRXs to an artificial turf outside where they can do some, you know, SQR outside and some quickness, reactive training, speed training outside. So definitely a lot of toys for the trainers to come play with.
Cool. How many trainers do you have?
I have 20 trainers looking to get up to we're looking to get up to 25, 30 here in the next 4 to 5 months.
Cool. What do you look for in a trainer when you're hiring?
Honestly, before I used to look for certs. I was all about the NASM, NSCAs, the ACEs. Now it's more of, I've had some of the smartest trainers be the worst trainers because they were book smart but had no people skills and didn't have a personality. And then I had the other way. I had a trainer who maybe didn't have the best dirt in the world but was one of my most successful trainers because he connected with the members and was friendly and had the right personality and was here for the right reason. And for me now, it's a blend of both. I look for education because I'm a firm believer in the more educated you are, the more confident you're going to be, the more clients you're going to be able to train and help change lives, but also that personality. What does it look like? Are you on the floor talking to members, or do you hang out behind the desk because you're afraid to talk? What is your why? I'm a big why guy. Why do you want to be a trainer? And that's my, any interview, I actually have one coming up here in about an hour, any interview, my first question is, why do you want to be a trainer? And, for me, I always get the, I want to help, I want to change lives. I'm like, that's the generic answer. What is your reason for being a trainer? I dig deeper now in my interviews just to kind of get the right cause for why I want to hire you. Because for me, I'm trying to build a level 9 team. I can't have a level 2 trainer on my team. It's not going to work. Uh-huh. And I can't climb Mount Everest with a level 2 trainer. So for me, I'm trying to hire a blend of education, personality, and just the overall, I'm here for the right reason.
Have you read Simon Sinek's Start With Why?
I have. The Golden Circle?
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
So what is your why? Why do you train? Why are you here?
For me, it's a couple things. Obviously, being that I'm from a Middle Eastern descent, obesity runs huge in my family. I've lost both my grandfather and my grandmother to heart attacks because they were overweight. My father is also overweight. He's, if he doesn't start watching it here and continue on his fitness journey, he's going to end up in that same situation. So for me, it's just battling general my genetic disposition of that what I how I grew up. And two, for me, I have a little brother who's deaf. So, you know, I always looked at it as I'm blessed with a lot of these things that he doesn't have. So for my why, it's, I work out, for one, to make sure I'm around for my family, my brother, my father, my parents. And then for me, I'm 31. I'm about to get married in November. I want to be around for my kids, you know. Yeah. So it's not just about me. You know, my own personal mission statement in this is I want to inspire change worldwide. It's not just within my club. Actually, that's why I'm doing a summit, and we're doing this interview right now. It's for me. I want to spread the faith. You know, everyone has a reason for working out. And once you identify the reason, the how and the what are easy. It's, we got to identify the why.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the NorCal Fitness Summit. Tell me the spiel. What you got going on?
Man, that's my baby right there. So it's been, like I said, 3 years in the making. It's been, I've reached out to a lot of my fellow fitness professionals in the industry, Pete Holman from Rip Trainer TRX, and Rock Tape. I don't know if you heard of Rock Tape. They're pretty, the Kinesio Tape. You know, they're going to, so I'm reaching out to a couple of colleagues to come out, and it's a 2-day summit. I believe that Northern California doesn't get enough attention for fitness seminars. I love Perform Better. I love IDEA, but they're always in Southern California or on the East Coast, or in Seattle, you know, this year. So they don't make the way to the Bay Area or Northern California. So, and we have some talented trainers up here. You know, we have some very talented fitness professionals that, you know, want to speak and want to present and have some knowledge to share. Yet they don't get that chance to be on stage. So this NorCal Fitness Summit serves two purposes. One, bringing more education to the Bay Area, and two, giving some of these great trainers a platform to speak. You know, I'm not going out. I'm not trying to get the, you know, Gray Coates and Todd Durkins and Mike Boyles. And as much as I would love for them to come speak, one, I can't afford them, and two, you know, if you're big on education, you follow Gray Coates, Mike Boyles, Todd Durkins. You know all about them. So for me, this is something I wanted to keep it organic and to Northern California, but also bring in some of these top-notch fitness professionals to speak about their passion and talk about why and why they do what they do.
Nice. So most of the talent that you're pulling in is local to the NorCal area?
For the most part. I think we have 12 right now. We got about 12 presenters. About 9 of them are in the Bay Area from Northern California, and then I have a couple from Southern California, and then actually one out in Kansas.
Cool.
So it's you know, I've reached out, and you know, I've gotten some really good response, and it's a process, and I'm learning as I go. But I definitely have some friends in the industry that are helping me, you know, move this along. So it's, you know, you have one shot to do this, to make this thing successful, and they're definitely giving me the guidance to, you know, how to make it successful.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Good for you. 12 speakers over 2 days. Wow, that's sure. That's pretty cool. That's impressive.
It's exciting. It's gonna be a you know, we're gonna have a networking event on Friday night where everybody gets together and can hang out and talk. And you know, I've also started doing what I call the NorCal Fit Pro networking events. Every month we get together, and a bunch of the trainers in the Northern California area will meet at this one location, and we'll talk shop, have some drinks, you know, and get to know each other. And it's just that, it's the momentum, like that culture that needs to happen is why I'm doing this.
Cool, very cool. I appreciate that wholeheartedly. I understand a little better now why Tico made sure that we got in contact with each other, because I'm trying to do the same thing over on this side, so that's awesome. That's really cool. Do you have a website for the event yet? Is that up?
I do. It's actually, I have a Facebook page for it.
Email it.
Let me send it to you.
Email it to me, and when I put the interview up on my website, I will make sure that that there's a link to it, that people can get to it.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I have a few contacts out in that area, and hopefully I'll be able to send some people your way.
Well, I appreciate that.
Sure, no problem, man. That sounds like a very cool thing to be having going on. You know, over the last few years, I've kind of gotten a feel that there's kind of a little bit of a West Coast, East Coast thing going on in fitness, right? You know, there's all these dudes tied up, especially like up in the Northeast. You know, there's you know, Zach Evanesh and Smitty and at one time Matt Wachlinski was up there. You know, and we work our way all the way down the coast, and we got Elliot Hulse down in Florida. And so there's the Eastern Seaboard is pretty well tied together, and we all travel back up and down through there. And then I'm starting to get a feel for sort of a West Coast influence too. Clearly, you're doing your thing to build that over where you are. Seems to me that there needs to be an effort so that in order to prevent, you know, the inevitable rap-inspired future that we could come up with, and we're all going after each other gangster style. We need to try to meet in the middle, right? Create some sort Absolutely. Of fusion, sort of bridge the distance across the country between East and West Coast. So, to that end, I am very pleased to extend my hand to you and offer you whatever support that I can send your way.
I've always been very envious of that relationship on the East Coast. And I have a couple friends who are, I have a few friends who are trainers and own their own facilities that are on the East Coast. And, you know, they're always getting together. They're always talking. They're always networking. They're always driving each other's clubs and going out to lunch. And, you know, I'm envious of that because I want to do, why can't we do that out here? You know, we don't live that far apart that we just can't pick up a phone or Facebook each other and be like, hey, let's meet up. I'd love to pick your brain and talk and get to know each other. And that's something I've always been, you know, I've applauded the East Coast and the trainers out there that are doing that, and that's definitely something, you know, I'm trying to do out here.
That's cool. I was going to ask you, and I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, in my experience, particularly, I mean, I'm down here in Alabama, so I'm kind of tucked away in the third world over here in the corner, and there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of a lack of initiative towards cooperation where I am. There are several gyms. There's a CrossFit box two blocks in one direction and another CrossFit box three blocks in the other direction from my gym. You know, and I've had two workshops in the last year at my gym, and I've reached out each time to these other gyms, and I'm like, hey, I got this thing going on. If you want to come check it out, come on down. And I get crickets. You know, there's absolutely no response. And the only thing that I can chalk it up to is that people are afraid to connect because they're afraid that, you know, well, Dave, if I come over to your gym and I get connected with you, you're going to steal my shit, right? And we're competitors, right, in this market. And do you get the same feel where you are, or what's the vibe there?
You know, there's at times I do when I reach out to certain people, and you know, my whole thought with that is I will never be Todd Durkin, and you know, or I never be a Joe Dodell or a Mike. I'm naming these big names because they do share their system and they do share their methodologies and how they train clients, but it'll never be duplicated. Because I don't have Todd Durkin's personality, or I don't have Mike Boyle's personality. So, what is there to fear? I mean, you have the education. Now you have someone else's system. That's great. Now you make it yours. But now you have systems work for a reason. There's a reason why these guys are successful. So, what is there to what's the fear about? And I think a lot of people fear because they don't really know what they're doing. And so, that's my opinion on. You know, the whole sharing. You know, one of my good friends, his name's Anthony Trucks out here. I mean, we share everything. We buy something, I send it right to him. You know, I go over, he gave me his entire business plan of how he put his business together. I mean, I could easily went and copied it, but it's never going to be like his because I'm not him. So, I mean, share. I mean, get that. I mean, we're all here for one purpose, and it's to help change lives. It's to help inspire change and to help get clients results, whatever that result may be. That's our one purpose. So why not share what's working and get that cohesiveness that we're trying to get in the fitness industry?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm so pleased to hear you say that. I totally agree with that. One other thing that I wanted to touch on, I mentioned at the introduction that I was connected to you through our mutual friend, Tico Reindorf. And so one of the things that I absolutely love about Tico is that Tico is huge. Tico is a giant of a man. And I don't know, did you see the Big Man Strong product that he put out?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, dude, you got to check that out.
I'll check it out.
Tico celebrates being a big man. And as a fellow big man, I really appreciate and applaud that. I know when I started out in the industry, I busted my ass to try to get down to being one of those skinny dudes, right? Because, you know, there are in my gym, on the other side of the gym that's not my gym, but in the same facility where I hold my gym, there are a couple trainers who are just naturally, genetically, you know, lean, ripped dudes. That's God's gift to them. And they're successful trainers because people look at them and they go, oh, I want to look like that dude. I'm going to go do what he does, even though, you know, some of them really don't even do all that much, right?
Yeah.
What's your experience being a big man in what has become, you know, a little skinny dude's industry?
My experience at first was a little shaky. You know, especially when you're trying to talk to, a 60-year-old woman who is here for, you know, corrective exercise. And here's this, you know, I'm 265 pounds, so, you know, here's this 265 guy coming up and talking to you. That can be a little intimidating.
Yeah.
So, you know, definitely at first, you know, it was a little, you know, it was rough, and I was just like you, wanted to lean out and try to fit the modality of what everybody else is doing and what everybody else looked like. I now love being big. I embrace being big because for me, because now the skinny guy that can't put on muscle comes to me and asks me, okay, how are you as big as you are? And so now I love it because now I can sit down with somebody and be like, wait, let's talk program, let's talk calories, let's see how many calories you're eating, because trust me, I take in about 4,500 calories to be able to maintain my size. So, you know, once we sit down and break all that down for a member, they're actually envious of, wow, like, how do you eat that many calories to stay that big? And, you know, I've actually got a really good response from it now.
Excellent. That's good to hear. So that's another part of my mission is to try to change the general perspective about, you know, fitness and all of these people that are coming in trying to change their morphology, right? I mean, they're basically coming in and saying, you know, I want to look like, you know, that skinny twiggy blonde on the magazine cover, right? And I'm like,
yeah.
Well, hon, you're a beautiful thick black sister, you know? You're never gonna look like that.
Right.
You know? So let's work on making you the best you that you can be, and fuck that twiggy little blonde, because that's
there
not
you
your world, right?
The other thing that goes along with that is once they found out that I actually am, you know, I know what I'm talking about and I know what I'm doing, and I have the tools to actually help them. The whole size wasn't even an issue anymore, because now it was, you know, because I was big and I am a big guy, I made it, it was even more important for me to be able to connect with members. And so I went out and did my homework and read books on motivational interviewing and different types of, you know, life coaching, how to ask different life coaching questions and just how to connect with people. Because once I did that and now you have the education behind it, I could be 280 pounds and I'm just like a big teddy bear. Like, once you get to talk to me and get to know me, they lost sight of the size once they found out who I really was and that it's all about connecting, you know, that connectivity piece to a client. We'll forget about everything.
Nice. Cool. Very good. All right, so we're pushing close to an hour, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I want to hit you with a couple quick questions real quick.
Yeah.
Three books, you know, the last three books you've read, or three books that you're like, Dave, you need to read these books.
For anyone, you know, anyone who has a team, looking to build a team, you know, I definitely, it's called The Extraordinary Coach. I don't remember the author off the top of my head, but it's a phenomenal book on, it's a textbook, so you can't, it's designed like a textbook, so you can't read it in a couple of days, but it's all understanding how to ask the right questions to facilitate, to lead your team member to making their own decision without you offering the decision for, making the decision for them. So you're a facilitator, not a decision maker. It's definitely helped me with how to coach and motivate my team and develop future leaders within my team.
Cool.
You know, The Movement by Gray Cook, that's you cannot go wrong reading that book. It took me a good 3-4 months to read that book. It's a very in-depth book, but it definitely breaks down not only just the FMS and SFMA, but just the whole understanding of how we work with mobility and stability, and you know how, and the joint by joint approach, and all the different other avenues of the FMS, and how it actually helps identify possible injury, but also correct any deviation. And then the final book, Thomas Myers, Anatomy Training.
Oh yeah, that's a great book.
So I love that book. It opened up my eyes to fascial lines and fascial systems, and how, you know, a tight hamstring is not really a tight hamstring, but it could be because of the tight muscles underneath behind your neck. Loosen those up, and you loosen up the hamstring. And you know, man, you would have asked me that 7 years ago, I would have gave you that blank stare, like, I don't know what the heck you're talking about. And now it's a whole different, now it's, for me, it's a whole different approach. You know, we'll start from the ground up and figure out what's going on. So, you know, I definitely think those three books, depending on wherever level you are as a trainer, or if you're a fitness manager or not, I think those are some solid books.
Cool. What do you listen to?
For me, Strength Coach Podcast is one of my favorites. We're talking music.
Music.
I love house music. House music. That's the only music I listen to. I take that back. House music and the occasional country.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Yeah. So I had this conversation with Christopher Lopez last week. His video or interview is going out next week. Country is a wide spectrum. So we say, you know, yeah, I listen to country, but okay. So there's old school country, right? So we're talking Roy Acuff, Buck Owens, old school, right? And then there's like what I call the golden era, which is George Jones, Johnny Cash, that school. And then and I got told, see, I'm completely out of what new country is. So for me, new country is like Dwight Yoakam. So apparently that's like old new country.
Okay.
So define for me, when you say country, what's country music?
You know, I'm like, probably like old and new, somewhere in the middle, like the Garth Brooks, Tim McGraw, you know, Toby Keith, like, so in that realm, I've always been able to connect to country.
Cool.
Or, it's, you know, what's funny is anytime there was actual, like, a serious situation in my life, there was always a country song that fit that situation.
That's
how I fell in love with country. You know, anytime I was going through a bad breakup, there was definitely a country song for that.
That's right.
You know, I listen to when I do my home, when I'm doing homework or writing a paper. I can't listen to house music trying to do homework. My mind doesn't flow that way. So I need something a little bit more mellow. So I'll throw in some country and just relax and decompress and write or do whatever I got to do.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Khalid, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today. I know you've got a busy schedule, so I appreciate that. Everybody, this is Khalid El Masri, And check out the NorCal Fitness Summit that's coming out in October. I'm going to make sure that we'll have a link to that, and we'll also put up a link to your gym, too, so that, in fact, that's actually my closing question. I'm not going to break tradition there. If I'm over in the San Francisco Bay Area and I want to come train with you, how do I go about doing that?
Come to 24-Hour Fitness in Pleasanton, California. And I will be more than happy to take you through a session.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, Khalid, I appreciate you spending the time with us today. It's been
a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to meet you, and I look forward to continued conversations with you, man.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right.